This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte.
Today's word on the future, together. Because the future of business isn't driven by what machines or people do alone, but by all they can achieve together. See how we can help at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Recently, I asked a friend to join me on the New Yorker Radio Hour for a pretty big occasion. So, Lena, you in about 2 hours, you're going to be at your birthday party, celebrating your 30th birthday. And so what we did is we brought into the studio a big, giant bottle of champagne. Let's see if we can uncork it.
Oh, my God.
And make the appropriate
sound.
There it is.
Yay!
Happy birthday.
Thank you, David. This means a lot. I've known you now for 4 birthdays.
That's right.
You just so you guys get, at home can see, it's a bottle of Manischewitz that he's poured for me.
That is not true. I've known Lena Dunham for years, and we spoke just hours before she headed off to her birthday party. Turning 30 is a huge event in anybody's life, but Lena is the creator of the show Girls, the defining TV show of our era about life as an urban 20-something. And so you've got to wonder if closing that chapter could pose some sort of career issue for her, as well as the usual angst. Are you anxious at all about turning 30? Your show, your film, your newsletter, your presence in the world has all been about, in
not
some way,
being 30.
Not being 30, yeah. About being young and growing into yourself. And is this odd for you?
It's funny you ask. I feel thrilled about it. I've always liked the idea of being someone who's like past my major childbearing portion of things, doing my work, enjoying children who are old enough to talk and who I have and have friends who I like regularly meet for ethnic food. Like, that's just what I want my life to be. And I feel like, I mean, so much of what the show's about is how full of sort of not just sort of romantic, but existential drama your 20s are. And I just, the amount of times I text a friend and they write back, I'm depressed, but I'm not sure why, considering my job is good, but maybe my boyfriend just isn't fun enough. Like, it just seems like everybody's problems, like, I'm talking about obviously a very specific echelon,
the
highly privileged New Yorkers, girls who live partially supported by their parents in Brooklyn. But I will say that there's a sense that it's like, everybody needs something a little more high stakes to worry about.
You are right now filming the sixth and last season of Girls.
Yeah.
And the season we've all just seen was something immensely deeper, at times darker, than what we remembered from the first season, the second season.
Are you okay?
I'm great, you know? I work at, as the assistant manager in the second biggest cat cafe in Tokyo, and everybody's really jealous about that, and I'm dating this beautiful Japanese man, and we're gonna lose our virginities to each other, so everything's really perfect, you know, like, my life is perfect.
Yeah, you seem great.
Yeah,
you're not like, oh wait, you're like fully crying.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
I'm really sad. And I'm really f***ing lonely.
And did you have any idea, Lena, where you wanted your 4 characters, and it's more than 4 characters, really, where you wanted them to end up and where you wanted them to land in terms of their lives?
At that point, I remember thinking, if we get to make a pilot, Dayenu, to use the language of our people, that will be amazing, and I'll have that in my arsenal. Then when it got picked up, I went, oh, my God, if we get to do 1 season of this, I can't believe it.
So it's more of a scramble than we'd imagine.
So for the first two seasons, I think I was living with so much of a fear that all I'd ever heard about TV was like, you get canceled, you get pushed aside. I didn't believe that we were going to have, until probably season three, I don't think I understood that we were going to have the choice. As supportive as HBO was, this was all my baggage. I didn't know that we were going to have the choice to end this how we wanted to and when we wanted to. And so when it became apparent, like probably around season three, that, you know, we were going to get to make this show kind of for as long as we felt we wanted to, I think that's when we really started to put our heads together and think, like, so what's this going to look like? When's the right time to end this? Where do we want these girls to wind up? And I think that's when we were like, oh, let's start thinking about this in a more like holistic, long-term way, because
with what's called arcs, longer arcs and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And then before season five is when we decided, like, okay, season six is when we're probably going to want to end this
Why?
Thing.
Why? Because you're turning 30? No.
Well, it is a kind of neat and tidy coincidence, but I think our feeling was just like we wanted to make sure that we didn't start to overstay our welcome, or that it didn't start to feel like that kind of sitcom convention of dragging on these. The fact is like, these are characters who've been growing apart for a long time. And so at a certain point, it's going to make sense that their friendships really do splinter. And then what is the show?
So like, how do you go, birthday's lovely and we'll have a great time tonight and all the rest. Then there's tomorrow.
Yeah.
So how do you live the next part of your life creatively and personally after this enormous chapter and run of artistic achievement and psychological complexity, all of it? Now, there is a kind of door that you're walking through.
Well, I think a lot about the show, and who knows how I'll feel afterwards, but I think a lot about it as being a particular period of my life when I really went for it, sort of like excising the trauma of what it was to be young and talking about these issues. And I'm really looking forward, you know, like the next book I'm doing is a book of fiction. Whether there's things that from my life are recognizable, 100%, but it's still, that's a different thing. I'm so excited to be like...
Tell me about that, and it, so far as you want to.
No, I'm thrilled
to. A book of fiction. Why that, and what's it about?
It's a book of short stories. I'm doing it with Random House, although I'm not sure if 100% when it's coming out. It's about half... It's a bunch of short stories in a novella, and
Knowing you, it's already done. Because, like, the first time we met, I said, maybe you should write more, like the essay on Nora Ephron. And by the time I got home from the restaurant where we met, there was on my screen a manuscript of 14 pieces.
And you're probably like, God damn it. Why? Now I have to f-ing read these.
That was quick.
I did a bunch of them, but I think that the thing that I'm realizing is that fiction isn't, it's some, like, essays, there's a certain sort of, like, looseness to the form. And, of course, you can be cool and experimental with fiction, but I'm not George Saunders. I'm me, so I have to figure out a way to do them that I have to figure out what my form is and make it sort of sound like my voice. But I just felt strongly like I had stories to tell that weren't exactly my own. And there were, again, it's this thing about kind of taking your experience. Like, I don't want to write about being a famous person. That's the most boring thing in the world. But there are analogous experiences. There are experiences that might involve some of the same emotional realities that aren't, you know, me going, it was so hard for me to come home, to go to work the day after the Met Ball because I was tired and felt emotionally drained.
That is a bitch, by the way. I mean, it
was tiring, but it's not that fun to hear about.
And you've also got a new project, Lenny, which is a newsletter, a web magazine that you've been working on with your collaborator, Jenny Connor. And it's not really a Lena Dunham branding exercise as such. You've got a real point of view here. Tell me how that came about.
Well, that was the goal, which is not to do something that was like a vanity project or a sort of lifestyle site, because if someone wanted lifestyle information, I would not be the person that they would come to anyway. But it felt as though, like, Twitter is a landmine. You don't necessarily want to go there to have a 140-character per fight with somebody. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to express your opinions about sort of what it is to be female now, both politically and personally in a longer form way. And I wanted to be able to support the voices of other writers, because I feel like I've had this, like, tremendous gift of, if I've got an idea, if I've got something I've got to say, there's a good chance that I'm going to get a couple of people to listen to me. And so what I thought would be so great is if I could take that platform and give some space to some writers who have a different perspective or an unheard perspective.
And were these writers that were getting sort of shut out of other media, or you felt that you would be able to target an audience in a different way?
I think it's a combination. I think it's like Lenny is a really... I think that the internet can kind of like create the illusion that everybody's getting heard when they're actually not, when they're actually getting drowned out. And so obviously the feminist dialogue on the internet has never been louder, and that's a really great thing. But it also creates a lot of discontent about who are the loudest voices and how did they get that way. And so Lenny was – the goal was to level the playing field.
Right. Lena, you go to campuses here and there. You go to you're a graduate of Oberlin, which is a big formative
– a distinguished arguing college.
Distinguished arguing college. And how do you – when you go to campuses and you have conversations, how does that square with the kind of caricature that we're hearing about all the time about safe spaces and trigger warnings and all that stuff? Is that the reality of what you're seeing there, or is it more complex? Or what is your sense of the way political discussions are taking place on campus? What's your concern? What do you think is it just not a reflection of how it's going on?
It's a great question. The last time I went to Oberlin about a year and a half ago, I believe. Maybe it was more like 2 years now. And I felt like I went in kind of ready to – I was like, oh, God, am I going to get in trouble for like – am I going to get, you know, told that I triggered the whole audience and they're all going to walk out? Somebody told me there was going to be a protest of me, but they couldn't seem to really explain to me why there was going to be a protest of me. And
did what you ever find out?
Somebody told me that I was a line item in the story of – what did they say? How does it feel to be a line item in the so many people's story of privilege and oppression?
Okay.
And I was like, that's a big job. I didn't know I had it. But what I actually found was a bunch of super curious people who wanted to laugh and wanted to be entertained. And I think the thing that's always – the thing that I felt even when I was at Oberlin, which was the word trigger warning had not even entered the lexicon when I was at Oberlin, was that like there's amazing pluses and amazing minuses to giving young unformed people power over the direction that a community takes. And at its best, it starts these conversations that would never even occur to the adults in the room. And at its worst, it – like drives out free speech like wildly and aggressively. And the thing that's rough for me about like the whole trigger warning culture is that, you know, I have plenty of stuff. I'm a survivor of sexual assault. I have plenty of stuff that I've got a lot of, you know, anxiety issues. I have plenty of stuff that triggers me. But I also like to be given the respect to given the respect that I can handle ideas without internalizing them. And there's some sense that we need to like protect students like gentle flowers when the fact is like ideas aren't the thing that hurt people.
Lena, you've been campaigning here and there for Hillary Clinton.
Here and there and everywhere.
And everywhere. And yet in the circles that you travel in, I would bet there are a lot of Bernie people, a lot of Bernie Sanders people.
For sure the minority.
Now,
or I'm the minority, or there's people who don't want to, who are for Hillary, but don't want to talk about it because they don't feel like dealing with whatever backlash is going to come from their peer group or come from the internet or whatever.
So describe that backlash to me. What do you feel?
It's interesting. I get a lot of comments on Instagram that are like, "I thought you were cool. I thought your heart was in the right place. I thought you got it." And it's interesting because it's a reminder to me, like, there's something about my politics that's like distinctly sort of second wavy. Like I'm. Sort of, there's the, I'm
well,
like,
break that down for me. What second wavy means?
Like that I'm like that the, I'm, you know, like a Gloria Steinem, Kitty McKinnon, Bell Hooks loving, although Bell Hooks is into Bernie. So yeah, we're, but yeah. You know, I'm like the energy of 1970s feminism, 1960s, 1970s feminism still feels as applicable to me as it did today. It's like nothing makes me crazier than when sort of somebody looks at Gloria Steinem and goes, hashtag white feminism, because she, yes, she is a white feminist, but her.
But with Flo Kennedy at her side.
Her whole mission has been to like take the women that she, to take marginalized women and try to make them the face of the
movement. Helena, why Hillary and not Bernie for you?
I think she's the most qualified person for the job. I think that I don't mind the idea of having somebody who's a member of the establishment because guess what? The government is an establishment and there needs to be somebody who understands how to navigate it. But also, if all I wanted was a female in the White House, why wouldn't I have been running around behind, you know, Sarah Palin fixing her skirts?
There's been discussion among young people and old people about how Hillary performs gender. You hear her critics talking about shouting and yelling and why does she raise her voice and how she looks and is she – do you ever get a sense from talking to Hillary Clinton about how she feels about this more than beyond what she allows herself publicly?
I think when I interviewed her, something that she said was that I really liked was I asked her a question about fashion. And I wanted to be respectful, but also fashion is a part of what she has to deal with in a way that perhaps a male president doesn't. He goes and gets some Xenia suits and lives his life. And
then she has to get the jackets.
And she's got to get the jackets, and she's got to get the dresses, and she's got to get the gowns. And if you think about how much we think about what Michelle Obama's wearing, and Michelle Obama happens to ace it all the time, but not everybody's at Michelle Obama's level of fashion wizardry. And Hillary said, like, I was asking her about this Donna Karan dress that she'd worn early in her time at the White House. And she said, I like it, and people don't get this, like, I like to have fun with fashion. What's the point of spending all this time if you're not going to get to enjoy yourself? And I thought about how much this experience of being analyzed sort of, you know, each hand gesture and each facial gesture and your voice getting raised and whatever, how your voice getting raised and then your voice getting lowered, how much of the fun it must take out of it for her. And I
fun is never a word that we associate with Hillary Clinton somehow.
I found her, when I spent time with her, to be humorous, joyful, an excellent listener. The other thing is this, which is like every time I turn on the TV, I feel like Bernie's screaming at me. I don't have a problem with it. You know, I have a Jewish grandfather. I know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. But it's just an interesting thing.
Too much salt.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing to see this person who's fully expressing his identity nonstop and being rewarded for it. So's Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is expressing his identity. He's yelling. He's laughing at his own jokes. He's given permission to just go ham, hard as a mother, as Kanye West would say. And she's just not. I don't know. I trust that her beliefs and her I trust in her beliefs, and I trust in her ability to execute in her beliefs.
Lena, thank you so much, and happy birthday again to you. I'm going to clink your glass.
It's an
if
honor.
I can.
Yeah. I hope that all the Bernie bros don't come after me, but I also feel like they've already done what they can. I'm so happy to be here with you. It's a joy.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Lena Dunham, creator of the show Girls and of the newsletter Lenny. You can find out more about that at NewYorkerRadio.org.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.